I'm wearing a white t-shirt today and I have not spilled anything on it yet.
Great job.
It's kind of shocking.
That's like impossible.
I don't know how this has happened. I've been leaning very far over my desk while eating and drinking.
I'm saying that's impossible for everybody. You know what I mean? Like, well, how are you doing this?
I don't know how everybody doesn't ruin all of their clothes all of the time.
I know.
It makes no sense to me.
I had a shirt come out of the washing machine with a stain on it.
Did I tell you that I got home from my last round of shows and I had left a Sharpie in my jeans pocket? I destroyed like half of the clothes that I own.
It's a nightmare.
I was
but
like,
not that shirt. But not that white shirt.
Hello,
Patrick Hine.
Hi, fam. Welcome to our bonus episode.
Yeah, this is our 11th one of the year.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Well, tell them what we're talking about today.
So this is that very important show that we love, Murder Has Two Faces.
Yes.
This is the second episode. Don't worry, there are only three episodes. We're doing all of them.
That's it?
I know.
It's wild because Robin Roberts is the host here. She's sobbing in the end.
I know.
In the end, she's sobbing, I'm sobbing, the brothers, we're all sobbing.
So this is episode two. It's called Capital Killings, and this is the murder of Joyce Chang.
Yeah. Who everybody says her name wrong. It's horrible.
Well, they say it so many different times.
I know.
So many different ways. And her brother never says it.
I know, but it's Chang. But so many people say Chung.
Like, I know.
It really bothers me.
Yeah.
So we open with Robin Roberts. She's sitting down with Joyce Chang's brother, Roger. He is wonderful. He's such an advocate for his sister. They were so close. And like, as a member of a sibling group, I can say that that's not always the case.
Right. No.
You know what I mean?
But we get like at the top of this, that on-screen text where it sort of lays out
what we're doing here.
Yeah. So it says, this is the story of two crimes, two young women so alike working in our nation's capital, both connected to men in power. One woman, Chandra Levy, is a household name. The second, oh my God, I'm going to cry. The second woman is a mystery that deserves to be unraveled. Her name is Joyce Chang. And it's like, why is this only three episodes?
I know. I can only imagine they're going to do more. Like, so many shows come out now claiming to be like victim focused. There is actually a formula to proving that you're victim focused. And this is it.
The gold standard.
100%.
And this episode starts with Joyce's voice.
Message 4 was received at 2:20 p.m. Thursday.
It's Joyce. Just trying to say hi. Anyway, I hope you're having a good day, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.
It's so jarring, but not, it's just like, oh, she's here. She's here with us. You know, which is the point of the show.
It is unsettling because it's like when you know what is about to happen to the person, it's brutal.
Right.
So we meet Judy Kim. She was Joyce's best friend in college. She and Joyce had so many dreams. They began their careers in DC and they wanted to like move to New York together. We're going to learn, like, Joyce was the president of her class at Smith. She gets this, like, incredible internship while she's working a full-time job on top of it.
Powerhouse.
And was, like, so amazing and lovely and supportive and, like, didn't want to ever talk about herself. She wanted to talk about her friends and, like, just an amazing woman.
She loved her friends. All of, you know, hearing, that's not the only voicemail or phone mail, as she calls it, that we hear. She loved her friends.
Yeah.
The fact that she's leaving cute voicemails for people is like, oh, that tells me everything you need to know about her.
And it really was like, I remember in college, the whole voicemail game. Like, you could just dial direct to people's voicemail and just leave them messages without their phone ever ringing.
Oh, so fun.
So people would just like wake up in the morning to like messages from you.
That's fun.
Very fun. It's like a Valentine's Day thing almost.
Oh my God. It's such a thing of the past. Now.
It's such a thing.
Unless voice memos. Now we've come all the way back around.
That's true. I still feel self-conscious about leaving you voice memos because I can't decide if you like them.
Don't. I'm into them now.
You are. Okay, good.
The only thing, you know what I had to let go of?
The need to respond.
Yeah, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
Sometimes I respond with a voice memo, sometimes I don't.
I never
sometimes
need
to just read the transcript.
For me, it's like my thumbs are tired. I can't. That's a lot of information I gotta give you.
I know.
And I don't need to call you.
Right.
And but I'm not gonna send you a whoop that's like this long.
No, I'm super into them now.
Okay, good. You're looking very directly.
I
at
love
me.
Them.
Okay.
Well, because I left one today.
Oh, you did? For me?
No.
Oh. For who?
Well, I'm hosting this Burr event on Thursday.
Aaron Burr from Hamilton, because Jillian is a fucking Hamilton icon. And as the Hamilcast pod, you're so, what's the word? I want you to fucking talk about how awesome this is.
Oh my God.
She was asked by the Hamilton powers that be to like moderate this panel of Aaron Burr's. So she had to call them all or actually leave them voice memos.
I left three of them a voice memo because I was letting them know that at that event, now it's in the past, I can say it, that I will be announcing the end of the Hamilcast at that event. 10 years and 500 episodes.
Is this the first our listeners are hearing of it?
Yeah.
I've known about it, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, like, I made the decision last year.
Yeah.
I told Lynn and everyone in February.
Wow.
So I've been sitting on it for a long time.
10 years.
It's really exciting.
A decade.
It's super bittersweet, but it feels right. And I've been saying, if it's not 10 years and 500 episodes, it's going to be 20 years and 1,000 episodes. Because uh-huh. What other way? It just sounds
yeah,
right,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the voice memo I left today.
In fucking incredible,
girl.
Let them
know.
And fam, so much more about that to come because we're going to be blowing this
up. Oh, thanks.
Through the end
of
the year.
Look, this is a celebration. This is a fucking party.
Oh, one. That's what I mean. Like we're going to.
This is a party.
Party.
So yeah, anyway, this is not about me. This is about Joyce today.
Well, actually, can we talk about Eddie Dean, the journalist? Because
sure.
At the time of Joyce's murder, he was working for the Washington City paper. And I remember newspapers. I loved newspapers.
Yeah.
I loved that, like, in New York, you could get on the subway and somebody would hand you a paper and you could get it, like, on the subway and, like, read the morning news.
Sometimes
on
a Sunday, Mike and I will, like, get a paper.
We'll,
like,
Steve, it's the weekender. So yeah. We'll get it, like, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I think.
Yeah.
And
Daily
like,
News.
You read the Daily News?
Mike does, yeah.
I love it.
Once in a while, he will. Like,
he wants to know what's going on out in the Hamptons.
On a Sunday,
he
sometimes.
He wants the tea.
Yeah, or like Newsday.
Totally.
Not the Post.
Never
anything
the Post.
But the Post.
Oh, I miss newspapers. But anyway, we learn, and I didn't know this, that in the early 90s, D.C. was the murder capital of the country?
Yeah, of the world, I thought it said.
Oh, you're right. I wrote country, and then I quickly had to refresh and write world. You're right. But yeah, I mean, like, you go to D.C. today. I mean, not literally today, where it's like, under martial law, D.C. fam, we see you.
Oh, my God.
But like, you know, D.C. is like, you go to D.C., and it's like, there's just like school groups. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Everyone's going to the Lincoln Memorial.
Right. Everyone's like, learning about the country.
Yeah. When I just did my D.C. show, people were like, are you taking Daisy to the side? I'm like, no, she's not here. But like, that's what DC is known for. Like, you go there to like go to the free museums and like learn shit.
Well, back in the day, Lauren Ashburn, the reporter, says,
I was the police beat reporter for several years. We chose which murders to cover based on how shocking they were. It was sometimes difficult to choose.
What?
That is wild. In the 90s in DC.
Yeah. So it's January 9th, 1999. Joyce disappears from DuPont Circle.
Yeah. So DuPont Circle now is like the gay area. That Starbucks is still there, by the way.
Really?
I'm not a DC expert, but I should say the last time I was there was a Starbucks in DuPont Circle that looked like this one. So
okay.
I'm imagining it's still the same place.
All right.
But like DuPont Circle is like a hoity-toity, you know, kind of a fancy area.
Yeah. And so Roger tells us more about his sister Joyce, one of the most loving, caring human beings in the world. You could hear it in her voice, like when we do hear her voice. He says, you know, they had two parents, four kids. They emigrated from Taiwan, settled down in the suburbs of Chicago. And then he tells us,
and we were the only minority family and the neighbors hated us. They threw rocks through our windows. They put cherry bombs in our mailboxes. We weren't safe walking home from school. And me being her younger brother, Joyce was my protector.
Why are people like this?
It really doesn't make any sense.
I don't understand how you go from waking up in the morning to saying, I'm going to cherry bomb my fucking neighbors because they're Asian.
Right.
I don't understand how you get there.
No.
The hatred.
I had the exact same thought. Also, where does one get a cherry bomb?
I don't know.
What
you got to make
is
it.
A cherry bomb?
I don't know, but it's horrifying. I
you
know
gotta
that much.
Make a cherry bomb?
I think so. You can't like go buy a bomb while you're making them.
I guess that's
right.
I hope so.
I know there's the murder aisle in Walmart, but they do draw the line somewhere.
Somewhere.
They just give you all the things you need to make the thing.
There was a cherry bomb cocktail at that barbecue restaurant in Times Square.
Cherry bomb.
And it would come with like a shot of rum at the top. Mike Jensen and I used to go and like ingest the 2,000 calories for like the frozen cherry bomb cocktail.
Oh my God.
I know.
Frozen?
We like two or three of them.
Wow.
That's a lot of calories. I know. Yeah, you're eating like bad, delicious barbecue and drinking cherry bombs.
Who cares?
Go have fun.
I don't count calories. It's no fun.
Okay.
Don't do for what?
But he was saying like even walking home from school wasn't safe.
Yeah.
And Joyce was his big sister, so like she was the protector.
And so like Roger says,
my parents, my mom in particular, would just be like, just be better. She pushed us to excel in school because she wanted us to be able to fly in life.
Boy, did Joyce take that and run with it.
Seriously, she was amazing. So we meet one of her other friends, Amy.
Yeah.
They were both government majors at Smith. And we have old video of Joyce talking about her college because she was the president.
Of Smith College.
Of Smith College.
Like, Smith College is one of the hardest colleges. It's an all-women's college, you know, up in Amherst, I think. It is such a hard school. It is, like, one of the best schools in the country.
Amy says, she ran that campus.
Yes.
Joyce ran it. She goes, she was the college president, but also the life of the party. She had it all.
And she was just like super ambitious, but not one of those like annoying ambitious people. Like she cared about other people's experiences too.
Yeah. And we get another one of her voicemails.
Jude, it's Joyce, and I'm studying, and I'm sick and tired of studying, and I thought I'd call you, and guess what? I want to sing into your phone mail like I used to, but I don't know what to say because I haven't practiced. That's a long time.
Because all her friends are like, oh, she left the best voicemail.
Yeah,
That's like a, kind of her thing.
I gotta tell you, that is like a real badge of honor in like 90s college.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because she got creative. Because she's like this stream of consciousness, like so sweet. She just adored her life and her friends.
Like back then before cell phones, like we all had those like whiteboards on the outside of our dorm rooms too. Like you would just like leave notes for each
messages.
Other. Oh my God. When I worked at Starbucks in Harvard Square and I got in trouble because I once... in one weekend called to check my voicemail, I think over 200 times.
Okay, that's too much. That's too much.
That is too many times. In retrospect, that is too many times. But like, I was desperate to hear messages from my friends. It was like my favorite thing.
Oh, you just want to hear their voice.
Hi.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
That's cute. Judy says she wanted to be just like her. She wanted to be just like Joyce.
Yeah. Well, and Judy tells us that they were both she and Joyce were second generation. Like they were born here, but with immigrants for parents. And so she says you have one foot in both cultures, like one foot in like the culture that the parents were raised in and one foot in this American culture. And I bet that's tough.
Because she says, and you're bridging the two.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And so Joyce, listen to this.
This is insane.
Joyce, after being amazing at Smith and being the president, she goes to Georgetown Law at night. And by day, she was working on Capitol Hill for an unnamed congressman.
Unnamed congressman.
Hmm.
Yeah.
She was working and or studying 7 days a week. She was nonstop.
Yeah. I mean, that is an insane schedule. To like, to going to Georgetown, once again, one of the hardest schools to get into in the country, in the world. And then at night, while working on Capitol Hill during the day, I cannot imagine it.
And then just using, I guess, the weekends to study and do all the work.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Oh my God.
Right? Because when
I'm exhausted just talking about it.
Usually, like, you go to school during the day and then at nighttime you do all the work you have to do. But
yeah.
She's working during the day, going to school at night.
So oh
she
my
was
God.
All day, every day. She was.
And it's law school. That's like 10 hours of homework a night.
And so when she graduated from Georgetown Law, she got a job as an attorney for the Immigration and Naturalization Service. What a terrible fucking name.
I know.
Naturalization. Like, really?
I know.
Really?
Immigration and Naturalization Service. I can't do it. I can't say it.
But it's also just like, can we not use that word?
Oh, yeah.
My God.
They still use it to this day.
It's a horrible name.
Petition to change it.
Please.
Immigration and like, welcome to America, bitch.
Yeah.
Why can't we call it that?
A great many reasons.
Immigration and welcome to America, queen.
Yeah.
Can we do that?
How about just welcome.
But I want it
we're
to be
not
gayer.
Hate you. Oh,
I'd like it to be gayer.
Okay, great.
Welcome to America, Mary.
Yeah.
Okay, we can do that. She works for the Immigration and Welcome to America, Mary service.
Yeah. Or baby.
Baby.
Welcome to America, baby.
Oh, I like that. It's
maybe.
Less gay. It's less gay.
It's less gay, and I don't like it anymore.
Okay. Give me one more gay one.
You said bitch.
Yeah.
Girl.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Welcome to America, girl.
She worked for the Immigration and Welcome to America, girl service. Welcome to America, girl. But you got to say it like that.
Okay.
Can you do it?
Welcome to America, girl.
Thank you.
Probably wait a couple years if you're thinking about doing that.
Oh, this is not the time.
This is not the
time.
And
will you take us in your country?
And can I come visit?
I
come live there?
Please. Thank you. Yes, totally.
Travel down the road and back again.
Girl, Drip Drop is back. Look, I've really upped my game at the gym. I'm working the muscle groups now, so I am all about the hydration, and Drip Drop is the one I'm using now. Drip Drop is doctor-developed, proven fast hydration. I can really see the difference.
Yeah, so here's the thing about Drip Drop. It delivers 3 times the electrolytes and half the sugar versus the leading sports drink.
Literally.
So you feel the difference fast, like less fatigue, more focus, no more midday crash.
No, Drip Drop is a breakthrough hydration formula that's backed by science. You know we love science on this pod, which is why it's trusted by firefighters, medical professionals, and over 90% of top pro and college sports teams like me.
I was gonna say, and you.
And me.
And you. So I love it. So what are you doing? You're just like putting it.
Yeah, I put it in my water. I shake it up and I take it to the gym with me, but I also drink it throughout the day. I say this all the time. It makes me want to drink more water. I drink probably double the water I was drinking 2 weeks ago.
Right.
My current favorite, because it's pink and I'm gay, is the strawberry lemonade.
Oh
I'm
my
obsessed.
God. I'm all about the fruit punch.
That's also gay.
Yeah, give me a fruit punch anything. I am there.
So fam, right now Drip Drop is offering TCL listeners 20% off your first order. Go to dripdrop.com and use promo code TCO.
That's dripdrop.com, promo code TCO for 20% off.
Stock up now, fam, before the heat hits hard.
Dripdrop.com and use promo code TCO now.
Get that strawberry lemonade and think of me.
Or the fruit punch.
Or the fruit punch.
So good. January 9th, 1999, Joyce goes missing. It's a Saturday morning. She went into work. She planned to have dinner with her friends that night. She said goodbye to her brother. See you later tonight. Bye. And then Joyce never came home.
And, like, the brother, Roger, doesn't really realize this. They live together. But, you know, like, I mean, she's incredibly busy. I'm sure he is, too.
Yeah.
He doesn't realize until Sunday night that she never came home from her, like, Saturday night plan.
I didn't suspect anything until Sunday night when she didn't come home. And I started to get that tingling feeling that something's off. And so I started calling her friends.
I received a voicemail message on Sunday saying, "Have you seen Joyce? She didn't come home last night." And I said, "That's not like her at all."
We started almost like a phone tree, calling each other, her Smith friends, her Georgetown Law friends, and her friends at INS. None of us heard from Joyce over the last 24 hours.
Nobody's heard from her in 24 hours.
So Monday, January 11th, 1999, 2 days missing. It says Tuesday, but that's a typo because the next on-screen text will also say Tuesday.
I did a lot of Googling of the dates and days of the week.
It was a Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everyone's frantic. And Roger goes to Joyce's office and is looking through her desk and her papers, and he's not finding anything that could possibly help.
And my whole thing is, like, everybody's going to do this their own way. This is truly just a question. I'm not mad at anybody, but why isn't he calling the police? Like, I don't know what going to her... I mean, maybe you go to the office and see if she's there. Remember, this is a time before cell phones. She probably wasn't as accessible as we would be today.
Yeah.
But, like, call the police. If you're going through her drawers at work, call the cops.
Yeah, I think... though, when you're not a white person,
I had the same thought.
It's never going to be your first thought.
Your go-to? I guess so. I thought that too, but I was like, can we just fire on all cylinders here?
Well, look, Tuesday, January 12th, 3 days missing, her coworkers call the FBI.
Well, that's the other thing. When you work for the government, you can bypass the cops and go right to the feds.
Right.
You know?
And they do.
Yeah.
So FBI Chuck is here, and he works for the Violent Crime Squad, and I'm like, fucking great.
I know.
That handles all the federal violent crime violations. Perfect.
And Chuck tells us this is what they know. She'd gone out with some friends on that Saturday. She was dropped off at that Starbucks in DuPont Circle. And he said we had enough to place her in DuPont Circle right about when she would have gone missing.
I just want to say about Chuck, Joyce is a federal employee. So that's how her case got to him.
Yeah.
That's why it's a federal crime. So she's a federal employee.
If anybody is a federal employee and they go missing, it goes right to the FBI.
We're just told that because she's a federal employee, like, that's how Chuck got her.
Because I'm like,
case.
That's a benefit to the job. You know what I mean?
What's so scary, though, is that she was 4 blocks away from home.
Yeah.
What happened?
And why did they drive? I mean, maybe she wanted to go to Starbucks to get coffee or something. Like, we don't even know when, so we don't know if it was open, but why drop her there and not at her actual house?
I don't know.
We meet Naomi Ishisaka, and she's a journalist, and she says, speaking of Joyce, she says,
her story in and of itself wasn't enough to merit national coverage. Our culture has ideas of who is a universal victim, and that narrative is very much dictated by race and class and age. When it comes to Asian Americans, I think we're largely invisible. 2 years later, in the case of Chandra Levy, the media was obsessed with it. It was all over the news.
The word merit really stood out to me there. It's just like, it's like when anybody goes missing, it should be on everybody's fucking phone in 5 seconds. And this is how we get the comparison to Chandra Levy, because we learned that 2 years later, with the case of Chandra Levy, the media would become obsessed with it and it would be all over the news constantly.
And she lived a few blocks away from Joyce.
They had the same lives. Like Joyce was working on Capitol Hill, Chandra Levy was working on Capitol Hill.
With powerful men.
Yes. And of course, like, the Chandra Levy of it all was, like, there was, like, the idea that Chandra was having an affair with the congressman. That does make that story more salacious, but it is undeniable. We know this to be true, that white people are always going to get more coverage than anybody else.
Right. And so Roger, Joyce's brother, is doing everything he can to find his sister. He's retracing her steps because she went missing so close to home. So
yes.
I think when it happens there, you're just like, what am I? It's got to be right under my nose.
Yeah. And Roger just seems like the type that, like, he's just never going to give up. Right. So he walks over to that Starbucks where she went missing. He's sort of just, like, walking, like, in the back of it, and he finds an alley. And he says, spray painted on the brick wall of the alley says, "Good day, JC. May I never miss the thrill of being near you." And it chills him to the bone because her name is Joyce Cheng, JC.
So he tells the FBI and they check it out right away. And they eventually say, this is unrelated. This is old graffiti. It had been there for a while. And usually when they see, they've seen like that very JC and other places, and it is Jesus Christ.
Because I got to tell you, I was with Roger. I was like, this is it. I was 100%. Like, 100%. But then as soon as they said Jesus Christ, I was like, oh, right. Of course,
oh,
that too.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Her.
Right. I just bought for one of our drag bingo prizes, I bought a pouch with Jesus on it with gay flags that says, I'm okay with it.
Yeah. That's the right answer.
That's the right answer.
That's the right answer.
God, can you imagine how mad he'd be in like all of these people speaking for him?
Furious.
Do you know that I was raised like studying the historical Jesus because it was one of my mother's passions?
Yes.
Like, don't come for me on the historical Jesus because I can out-Jesus you. I know all of it.
Whoa.
Yeah. I will out-Jesus anybody who thinks they know better.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's also just common sense.
I don't like, I'm yelling at our people as though any of these people are going to cover me. I know you all are not, but it's just in general, don't talk to me like I don't know about Jesus. I know Jesus.
Yeah, I also think it's common sense to realize that it wasn't all about hate. Let's get real.
Or any of it. You know what I
mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes. 100%.
It's the right take, but it shouldn't be a hot take.
No, but I also just love it. I love the provocative nature of like Jesus with pride facts being like, I'm good with it.
Great.
It's great.
I'm good with that. So the FBI is investigating.
We did a search of Roger and Joyce's apartment. We looked at her bank accounts, her email accounts, her cell phone. She's trying to understand Joyce, her relationships. She had her friends. She had her routines, her job, and that was basically her life.
And they did bring in an FBI profiler who asked me if Joyce kept money under her mattress because we're Asian.
Robin Roberts and I make the same face at the same time. We're
same.
Like, what?
Can I be counted in the face club? Like, what does that even fucking mean?
I don't know what stereotype they're talking about or what assumption they're making. I know that it's rude, but I don't understand how we got there.
And it's clearly a real, if Roger knows about it, it's obviously real, but it's like, what?
I've never heard anything. Thing like that.
No,
I
know.
I don't know.
Once again, I'm saying it's clearly a thing.
It's rude.
But meaning that, like, I'm sure the stereotype exists.
100%.
But, like, what? What the fuck is wrong with people?
What is wrong?
And what does it matter? You know, what is it going to tell you about her, her abduction?
Zero. And Naomi says they made assumptions about her life because she was Asian. They didn't say she went to Smith. She was president of Smith. She graduated Georgetown Law. They didn't say she was a lawyer. They didn't say she was American. They didn't say she grew up in Chicago.
Right, yeah.
And all of these assumptions, Naomi says, delayed the entire case.
Of course.
And so Joyce's friends and family, led by her brother, Roger, are telling everyone about Joyce because she's not getting the attention she deserves.
No, and like they burst into action, making the flyers, they're hanging them up everywhere. And he says they make a little bit of headway getting like little 20-second stories in local news. But he said, you know, eventually they realized there were no witnesses coming forward and they weren't getting anywhere. I mean, obviously, like the media was less interested because she was a non-white woman. But also, it seems like nobody saw anything. No,
you know what
I mean? It was like the middle of the night. DuPont Circle. I mean, like, you know, DC, any city is not like New York. There's not always people out, you know? Mm-hmm. But like that area of DuPont Circle, it is pretty residential now. I don't know what it was like back then, but like, it just seems that nobody saw anything.
And there are no leads. Like, there's nothing in any of her accounts or paperwork. Like, there's no clues to anything.
And what it makes me imagine, and it's horrifying, is that she was just snatched.
I know.
Somebody just grabbed her.
I know. Because sometimes, as we've learned in all of these years, that sometimes it's just like someone's waiting for the opportunity to do a bad thing.
Right.
You know? And
it's like that crime of opportunity. They weren't necessarily going to do it tonight, but they see a person standing there by themselves. There's nobody around.
It's so scary.
And that, like, that whole crime of opportunity thing scares me to death.
It's really, really scary.
You know? And I feel like I encounter danger in New York a lot. Like, if I'm walking in the morning, it's 4 a.m, I'm out walking the dog.
Yeah.
I see people size me up. You know, I've seen people in my neighborhood size me up to decide if they're going to mess with me, and then they don't. I've not yet been messed with.
Yeah.
But, like, that crime of opportunity always pops into my head in that moment, because I'm like, well, what if it was the guy that was like, this is him, this is the one?
I know. It's really scary.
And I understand, as a man, I have no idea what it's like to be a woman. And you and I talk about this all the time.
Like, I don't do Fiona's Nightwalk for a reason.
Yes. I mean, you must experience this a billion times more than I do.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, we'll go out. We call them, like, family walks. We'll go out on a family walk for at night. Or, I mean, it's not, like, as a rule, if Mike is sick. Like,
no,
obviously.
But of course not. We wouldn't have Daisy do it.
But
you know what I mean?
But the assumption.
When she's old enough to walk the dog by herself, which she is not, that's not what I'm saying.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. No, that was not to you.
No, I know.
That was to the internet.
But this.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'll do it. But the assumption is like, I do the super early walk and he does that. And it's just like, you
believe
know, that,
me, I think about when Daisy's old enough to be autonomous, like what will the rules be about when she can be out in the city by herself? That's a real thing. Like, and it just makes me think of Joyce standing in front of that Starbucks. Once again, we don't really know what time it was that she was standing in front of, but I'm assuming it was dark out. We see video footage of the
night. And it was open. There were people there, right? Right?
Well,
that
we don't know. We haven't been able to establish the exact time of this, but like it was
cold. She didn't go to dinner.
It was snowy, right?
She missed dinner.
Yeah.
So it was before dinner. So it had to have been open.
So like then people would have been around and nobody saw anything?
I don't know. What do you see?
I mean, when we find out what happened, like we're going to learn eventually, fam. She was put into a car with two other people. There's no way she got into that car of her own free will.
No. But that's the thing. We'll never know because it didn't get the media attention it deserved.
Right.
So maybe if it was on the news 24/7, someone said, oh my God, I saw her. But I bet people didn't even know
that anything really bad happened. Right. You know? Yeah, you're
that's,
right.
That's
that maybe somebody, people didn't even know what they saw. So maybe they did see something, but because it didn't get the media coverage, they didn't know that they saw something.
Right.
And like they keep cutting in the Chandra Levy story as just a way of saying that like 2 years later, this is going to happen again. And somebody, like another young woman doing the exact same job that Joyce had is going to go missing. And the difference is that it was covered everywhere all the time.
And even the cops are like, it was all day, every day.
Yeah.
Like the cops at the time, because remember, it was the same exact area. So
yeah.
The same cops were working on these cases.
Travel down the road and back again.
Girl, Everyday Dose is back. Look, this is that coffee that I've been obsessed with because it's coffee plus. Like, have you ever noticed, like, bloating or not feeling great after you drink, like, your normal morning coffee?
Yeah, so it's, like, coffee plus because there's, like, no crash and no jitters.
Yeah, and, like, the bloating is all gone and I feel great when I drink it. So Everyday Dose offers coffee that does more. We're talking 100% Arabica coffee with functional ingredients for smooth energy, calm focus, gut health, and skin support. So like you were saying, no crash, no jitters.
Yeah, the all-in-one coffee that makes you feel as good as it tastes, which I love.
I love it so much. They've got mild roast and medium roast. I love a medium because I like it a little darker.
Yeah, and the ingredients undergo third-party testing to ensure purity and potency, free from mold, gross, and they're rich in active compounds.
It's just so nice to have that thing that I was having every morning anyway, but now I know that it's helping me. That's gut health. I'll take it.
You don't feel bad afterwards. How amazing. Who knew?
Yeah. I love Everyday Dose, fam. And exciting news, you can now find Everyday Dose in Target stores across the country.
Celebrate with a buy one, get one deal. Just buy any two Everyday Dose products at a Target store near you and they'll pay you back for one.
Yeah, visit everydaydose.com/obsessed for more details.
Ooh, details.
I said
that's
details.
That's how you know it's fancy. So Tuesday, January 21st, 1999, Joyce has been missing for 12 days. And finally, there's a break in the case after almost 2 weeks.
The lead FBI agent says, hey, Roger, news aid, we found some of Joyce's personal belongings.
The FBI says agents may have found clothing belonging to Joyce Chang. The items were found near the Anacostia River on the grounds of the Naval Station.
The dividing line between the two Washingtons is the Anacostia River, where the disappearance happened. Was DuPont Circle, where Joyce lived. Her ID tags are found over on the banks of the Anacostia in the other Washington.
So Joyce lived in DuPont Circle, but her things are found like far away in Anacostia.
They say it's about a 30-minute drive
yes.
from where Joyce was last seen.
Yeah, so Roger and Robin Roberts go to the banks of the Anacostia River, and they're sort of like in the area where these things were found. Can we just take a minute for Robin Roberts? She is just oozing empathy. She is so here to tell the stories of these victims.
Yeah,
you know?
This is an excellent series and she's excellent in it.
It feels very personal to her.
Because she's also producing it. You know, like it's her show.
It's just that she's putting her money where her mouth is.
100%.
You know, they're telling us what was found. It was Joyce's jacket, keys, gloves, Blockbuster video card.
Yeah,
oh my God.
Her
Safeway card. And they're strewn all around like the banks of the river.
Except her jacket.
Yeah.
Her jacket was on the road and one sleeve was turned inside out, which makes everyone think that Joyce was, quote, pulled out of her jacket.
Yes.
And maybe for a minute, FBI Chuck says, like, almost got away.
Yeah. And we also learned that there's a big tear in the jacket. We never really get more into this, but there's a big tear in the jacket, which makes it look like there was like a struggle.
So like she was running away and they grabbed her because for the arm to be inside out, they like pulled it off her.
And then it ripped somehow.
She's like running away.
Yes.
God.
Yeah.
So the FBI wants to search the river.
And we get 5 minutes of how polluted this river is.
Again, why are people like this?
I know. And like, you know, the dive team is here and the divers are telling us like, when you're in the Anacostia River, you are in the pitch black and you are literally waving your arms around, hoping to bump up against a body. I would never recover from that.
No.
If that were my job and I just had my hands out and all of a sudden my hand is on a face.
I know.
No.
I know.
I would. No, somebody's got to do this. We got to fucking find these people. And right. God bless these people who are actually doing it. It sounds like a horror movie.
I got to tell you, this guy, Bobby, he's the former senior leader of the FBI dive team. We also met him in the first episode. He searched for Evelyn Hernandez and Lacey Peterson.
Oh, wow.
So he tells us about the dive. He goes, it was cold. There was snow on the ground. He was miserable conditions to dive in.
Yes.
Just really up against it.
They bring in a specialized team to like clean them when they get out of the river. That's
how
polluted
the
river is. They
have to get decontaminated.
Yeah.
Silkwood showers, which we will learn about in a few weeks on a regular feed episode. The Silkwood story.
Oh, we're doing Karen?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
All right.
Those
Silkwood showers,
man.
Are, wow.
It's horrifying.
Oh,
the whole story is bad.
Everything hurts.
She was killed. It wasn't an accident.
No.
I maintain.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. She was about to blow the, literally, like, she was the big whistleblower.
Oh, totally.
She was going to talk about all of it. She dies on the way home from a meeting, please.
You got thoughts on Marilyn?
On Meryl?
Marilyn Monroe?
Oh, that she was like abused.
But do you think it was a murder or do you think she died?
Yeah, no, Marilyn knew too much.
Marilyn knew too much.
Marilyn knew too much.
If Bombshell tell us nothing.
I mean, she knew too much.
You're right. She definitely did. Okay.
JFK was in with the mob. Like,
yeah.
So they find a body and it is not Joyce.
I mean, this is so upsetting on so many levels. Not only do we get absolutely no information
Zero.
About who this person is.
Or what happened or anything about
yes.
the case. Zero.
I mean, you go looking for a body and you find one, but it's not the one you're looking for.
In the absolute worst conditions imaginable.
Yes.
You happen to find a body. It's just not the one you were actually looking for. And we get no information about this poor person or what happened.
It's just unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Also, can we fucking drain the river at this point?
I also don't understand why you have, like, you finish your soda and you're like, you know what I'm going to do? Throw this into the fucking river.
There's a lot of things in this episode that are really confusing us.
I don't understand.
I know.
Why do you pollute?
I don't
give a hoot. Don't pollute. It's very easy.
No, I try. Also, let's not start forest fires, literally.
Please.
You know what I mean?
Remember that scene? And this is what they used to do.
Yeah.
But that scene in Mad Men in an early season.
Oh, where
they're on a picnic.
And she goes like this with the blanket.
She just throws. That's her cleaning up.
Do you know that I read an article about that? And they were like, that's
what
you would do. There were no trash cans in public places.
No.
So you would literally like just take the blanket and go like that. And it was somebody else's problem.
Or like throw it out the car window.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, yeah.
Truly, that's what happened.
I know.
And then eventually we start polluting and destroying the planet. And
yeah.
Now they had to have all these like ad campaigns with indigenous people being like, you stole our land. Can you not destroy it?
I know. Yes.
Could you maybe fucking throw out the cup, Betty Draper?
I know.
What?
You're on a tear.
Go watch
it. I want a list of your demands. I want a list of your demands.
They're really simple.
I agree.
Be nice.
Yes.
Don't be racist.
Yep. Don't litter.
Don't pollute.
Can we add forest fires?
Of course.
And Marilyn knew too much.
Marilyn knew too much. There's another great Mad Men episode when she dies.
I know. And
how they cover it, how they covered like huge monumental pieces of history in that show
yeah.
is excellent.
I couldn't agree more. They could have touched on the Stonewall riots. They were right
they
there.
Didn't.
They didn't do it.
I know they didn't. And they fired Sal.
Oh.
For being gay.
Why are you people like that?
Why are you people?
Welcome to our Mad Men podcast.
Don't even say those words to me. Like, don't
I know,
even.
I know.
In a heartbeat would I do that.
Okay.
So the FBI analyzes Joyce's belongings.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry, Lee Gardner Jr. gets Sal fired. That's the end
right,
of that story,
yeah,
in
yeah,
case
yeah.
you're wondering what happened.
Yeah.
Lee Gardner Jr. basically said, it's Lucky it's my account or Sal, and they were like, oh, it's no
of
question
course.
We're firing him.
Also, your job will do that to you any day. That's what I used to always think when I worked in corporate America. Any day.
Sal was so good
So
at
take
his
that
job.
Vacation, because you deserve it and you need it.
Take the vacation. Don't take work home with you. It's work. It's not that serious. Unless you're like a heart surgeon.
Yes. Oh, God.
It's not
but
that serious.
No, let's do that in the
emergency. But I'm saying it's not that serious.
Let's do it in the emergency
Unless
room.
You're like actually curing cancer.
Uh-huh.
What? So it won't get sent until later? Okay.
I mean, you can also schedule an email.
I'm so hungry.
Traveled down the road and back again.
Girl, hers is back. Look, we all know this. Those weight loss medications are everywhere right now. It seems like everybody is taking them. But girl, have you ever looked at the price of these things?
Yeah, it's hard to believe they're actually accessible. So that's where hers comes in.
100%. So hers is transforming women's healthcare by providing access to affordable weight loss treatment plans.
Yeah, and here's the thing. They connect you with a medical provider who will work with you to determine the best treatment option for you. I think that's so important. A lot of people are trying to get these like under the table. No, no, no. You need a doctor.
Let me tell you, I've been on these GLP-1s for 2.5 years now, and without the guidance of my doctor, I would have been absolutely lost and I wouldn't have felt like it was safe. So that is what hers does for you.
Yeah, so if you're prescribed, you get medication as part of a doctor-developed weight loss program. So you get the ongoing care, the check-ins, the dosage, the medication adjustments, and 24/7 online support at no additional cost.
Let me tell you, you will have questions. You need those check-ins. You need to be monitored by a doctor. Plus, your personalized treatment ships for free directly to your door.
If you're taking any kind of medicine on a regular basis, you should be talking to a doctor.
I know, I'm not a doctor, but I think you should be talking to a doctor.
Like, am I crazy?
Yeah, no, you're definitely not crazy. Okay, great. So, fam, if you've been struggling with your weight loss journey, it's time to find the best option that works for you through Hers.
Start your online visit today at forhers.com/TCO.
That's forhers.com/TCO for your personalized weight loss treatment options.
Forhers.com/TCO.
Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not approved or reviewed for safety, effectiveness, or quality by the FDA. Prescription required. See website for full details, important safety information, and restrictions. Actual price depends on the product and plan purchased.
Nice.
Yeah, you I did the whole last thing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The FBI analyzes Joyce's belongings, right?
Yes.
The forensic testing, all that. It comes up with nothing, which is absolutely devastating. So Joyce's friends and family are like, do you think we're giving up? Absolutely not.
Joyce's friends and family were persistent. They had weekly vigils trying to keep her story alive. We started the vigils the first Saturday night she was missing.
So I ask everybody, keep praying, keep the faith.
Early on, I couldn't walk around D.C. without my sister staring back at me. Joyce's missing poster on street lamps and store windows everywhere. And then Joyce's story began to fade.
If your family or friends go missing and you're not getting any attention, do the vigils. They work. Also, call me and I'll come.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean?
We'll talk about
it. Like, her brother and her friends were fucking warriors for her.
Weekly vigils.
Yeah.
So 3 months later, on April 1st, 1999, Joyce Chang's body is found in the Potomac River.
Yes. The Potomac River feeds into the Anacostia, or one way they come together.
Right.
So that's important to know.
And we hear about this all the time because then it feels like the case goes cold, right? Like they find a body, so the investigation stops. And this happens all the time.
Right. Because like they found her, which means they don't have to solve it. They just they found the body, so now they can move on.
Right. But the FBI has reassured Roger that they are still working on solving Joyce's murder.
Yes.
So May 2001, 2 years after Joyce's death, Chandra Levy goes missing.
In Washington today, dozens of police are combing a city park, hunting for the missing intern Chandra Levy.
And so as soon as you heard of Chandra Levy's story, of course you drew parallels to Joyce. And it did make you think, like, what is going on here?
On the news, they said Chandra Levy is an intern from California, last seen in the DuPont Circle area. Everything tied in. From California, intern, DuPont Circle. And my heart just sank.
And then it comes out that Chandra Levy was having an affair with her boss, the married congressman, Gary Condit. So, like, once again, there's no denying the racism. I am not denying it. But there is that element to Chandra Levy's story, which like made it even more sensational.
But yeah, it just shouldn't be the case.
No.
You know, it shouldn't matter.
Yes.
And so, but
yeah, it should be. And even like when somebody goes missing, it should be all hands on deck at all times for everybody.
Right?
I couldn't agree more.
But brother Roger reaches out to Chandra Levy's family.
Yes.
Because he's like, well, maybe we can work together. There are a lot of similarities. Maybe we can help each other.
But also, does Washington, D.C. have a serial killer who's targeting young interns on Capitol Hill?
Well, that's the thing.
You know?
Because then the media is like, oh, now Joyce's...
Right.
Like, they're okay to discuss Joyce's case only as it relates to Chandra Levy's case.
Yes.
Not Joyce in her own
yep.
right as yep. a person. But her family's like, you know what? We wanted the national attention. We have
it. We'll take it.
We're gonna use this as much as we can. If this is what it takes.
We're desperate, of course.
Then we'll go on Larry King and talk about Joyce's case as it relates to Chandra Levy, if that's what we need to do.
Of course, of course.
And the cops are like, there's not a serial killer. These cases are not connected.
And the authorities are now reporting that Joyce may have died by suicide.
Okay. There was a report that she had broken up with a fellow worker at INS right around the time she disappeared.
Could that have been a part of it? Maybe, possibly. I'm not going to discount it. We had no actual proof of any criminal intent, just that it was a missing person.
I remember one theory that came up. She was an Asian. Some Asian cultures, if you lose face, you take your own life. So that was a strong possibility we had to look at.
What century do you think we're in?
And like you know the cameras are rolling. Like, yeah, and like
you, that's today.
I know.
He's saying this.
And he thinks he's saying something smart. He thinks he's saying the right thing. He thinks he's saying something that's going to make sense to us.
You know, Robin Roberts was like, keep that shit in.
Keep it in. That's the whole point of
that's
this.
That's the point.
Yes.
Where do you think we are?
I know.
Jesus Christ. It's rude. I know. It's insulting. It victimizes Joyce all over again. It traumatizes her family because now they have to answer to this.
Yeah.
And also, let me ask you a question. Did Chandra Levy possibly die by suicide? Did she run away? I thought all adults are allowed to go missing.
Right, right. Exactly.
So where's that
argument? She was having an affair with a married man. And Lord knows we're not trying to besmirch the name of Chandra Levy.
But those questions aren't asked.
Right. And it's the whole Gabby Petito thing of like, nobody's saying Gabby Petito should have less coverage, is that everybody should have the same.
Right.
Everybody should have the same amount of coverage.
Where's the, calm down, adults are allowed to go missing. Right. Where's that attitude?
Yeah.
Nowhere.
Yeah, yes.
I don't want to see it anywhere.
But I know.
It's a stark contrast. So May 22nd, 2002, a year after Chandra Levy goes missing, her body's found.
And it's like, she was jogging in a park and her body was found in a park. What the fuck took a year?
I know. Do we know if she was moved there or she was really there for
the
full year?
We covered this case like so long ago. And I think what we know is that she was attacked and sort of taken off the trail. Like, it wasn't an on-trail thing.
Yes.
But it just seems like they didn't really do a thorough search of where we knew she last was.
Right.
A year.
Yeah.
Everyone in D.C. is looking for her.
Everybody.
It takes 7 years, by the way, for them to identify a suspect in Chandra Levy. So March 3rd, 2009, a suspect by the name of Igmar Gwandike is identified. And basically, as the result of having confessed to a jailhouse cellmate, and we learned that he'd been convicted around the same time that Chandra went missing of attacking two women in the same park. And I think we also know, and they kind of allude to it in this episode, that the authorities kind of always knew that it was him, but they couldn't really get him. And when he admitted this to the jailhouse informant or whatever, like, that's when they were able to get him. This guy's eventually going to be convicted of this murder, get 60 years, but then is, like, deported back to El Salvador. And, like, the charges are dropped because of prosecutorial misconduct.
Yeah.
What the
I know.
Fuck?
I know. They dropped that bomb on us at the end.
At the very end. And I'm like, and I forgot, like, we covered this case so long ago.
Yeah.
Can we just play by the rules? Can we just go by the book so when we get these guys, they can actually stay in prison?
Good thing he did it, because if he was innocent, it would take 30 years to get him out of prison.
Honestly, truly. I mean, if then.
Make that make sense. Right, if then. So 13 years after Joyce goes missing, Roger gets an email. And the email is that Joyce's case has been solved,
yeah,
according to the police. And here's what they say.
That's
happened.
An email that should have been a phone call.
Yeah, talk about could have been an email.
Exactly.
Not this.
No, this could have been a phone call.
How about you send the email, do you have time to speak?
Yeah, right now, urgently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you pick up the phone or you just show up to the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's been 13 years.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
So here's what they say happened.
They believe that Joyce went to Starbucks and she was robbed by some drug users. And they drove her out to Anacostia Park where Joyce tried to escape. And she either jumped in the river or they pushed her into the river where she perished.
That was my first thought, that she was like, these fucking guys aren't going to jump into the river after me. I'm going in the river.
Yeah. And then they say, and she perished.
Because it was snowing that night. Like, it was freezing cold.
It was January.
Yeah. So, oh my God. And like, DC in January is freezing.
Is it?
Yeah. But I understand it. Like, she probably was like, I can't outrun them. And we don't know that that's what happened. But as a possibility, that makes total sense.
She's, yeah,
like, whatever the smartest thing to do is what Joyce did.
100%.
You know?
No question. And I'm not making light of this at all.
Yeah.
But it would not surprise me if she was also a really good swimmer.
Totally.
Like, it wouldn't surprise me if she sort of did a quick analysis of the situation and be like, I'm a good swimmer.
Yep, I'm going in.
I don't mean to say that lightly.
No. I mean,
she's good at everything.
Especially because of the way the jacket was. She pulled herself out of the jacket.
Yes.
They were holding on to her by the jacket. She pulled herself out. And like, yeah, I'm going to jump in the river. They're not coming in.
So we have two suspects. And they were arrested 3 months after Joyce disappeared on a kidnapping charge, on a separate charge.
Yeah.
And so they have enough to arrest them for Joyce's murder, but not enough to charge them, we're told.
Right.
And so by May 2011, Joyce's case is officially ruled a homicide, not a suicide, you idiot police chief.
And the thing that happens here is they give Roger, they literally are like, well, we're not going to be able to prosecute these guys, but we will declassify this as a suicide and change it to a homicide, as though that's some kind of win for him.
And but he says, like, we're happy that the record has been corrected.
Yes, and it's a ridiculous thing to ever have thought that she died by suicide.
Right.
I mean, like, it's so clearly not what happened.
And then we just learned that her case has been closed, but no charges.
Right.
So they solved it, but nothing happened.
Which means that these two guys are just walking around out there knowing they got away with murder.
They got away with it.
I hate that so much.
So we end with Judy and Amy, Joyce's friends, talking about Joyce and kind of bonding over reminiscing about her. And they said that Joyce used to say all the time, be happy and smile. And we end with another incredible message she left. And she's singing about being happy.
When you feel sadness, don't take for granted this thing called life.
That was your sister.
Yeah.
You brought her back to life today for many who now know her.
Yeah.
Now know her story and know the impact that she had in her time here.
Yeah.
I want to talk about this one moment between Robin Roberts and Roger the brother.
Yeah.
Because it's at the end of the interview. And this is what I'm talking about like the playbook for how to actually be victim focused and to take care when you're interviewing the family members that have so graciously agreed to sit down with you.
Yes.
And like, I think that it is so important for these people who do these interviews to take such care when interviewing the family members of the people who have been tragically killed.
Yeah.
To take that moment with him to say, hey, you just did something really hard.
Yeah.
But you did it for a reason. You told people who didn't know about your sister about her. Now people know about her. That's why you're here.
I mean, this show.
It's so good.
It's so good. It's so needed.
Yeah.
Even if someone takes away from it, like, I'm going to do a better job interviewing tomorrow.
Yes.
Even just taking care of these people, like you're saying, you know,
well,
like,
even Robin Roberts so crying, like, you know, journalists aren't supposed to show emotion or whatever. Show that fucking emotion.
Shut up.
Show it.
Because Roger's a person too, and who just wants to be seen and heard.
Yeah.
The whole reason we have this series is to show how that wasn't happening for him.
Exactly.
And his family and people like Joyce.
Yes. Oh, you're doing good work over there, kids.
Love the show. Please make more episodes.
Yes.
So we end with on-screen text that the two suspects believed to be responsible for the murder of Joyce have never been charged. One of them is serving a life sentence for a prior conviction.
Yeah.
And the other one, his whereabouts are unknown.
His whereabouts are unknown. I'm going to say his name. Neil Joaquin. If you know where this fucking guy is, DM me, please.
Call the FBI.
Yeah, you know what? Do that first, but then also DM
me. Cut out the middle gay. Do you know what I mean? You probably won't see it. It'll go into your...
I actually pay very close attention to my DMs. On Instagram. If you're DMing me on TikTok, I'm never looking.
But they go to some weird place if you don't know the person. There's always like these secret folders.
Fine. Call the FBI.
Call the FBI, please. Thank you.
Okay, but also DM me.
Just to say hi.
We did it. What's it called?
So this is Murder Has Two Faces, Episode 2, Capital Killings, but it is the murder of Joyce Chang.
Yeah, the murder of Joyce Chang. Thanks for sticking around. Join our Facebook group. Join the Disky. Join the Patreon. There's so many places to hang out with us.
So many.
I know. We love you.
We love you.
Now get out of here.
Yeah, and just please make more episodes of this in the meantime. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
I don't ask for much.
That's true. You don't. Bye.
Bye. We love you.